You know, Steve, this podcast is pretty good, this Bricks Behind the Ivy. Let me talk to you about, you know, these two hosts. You got this Jeff guy. Hey, you know what? Did you know that Jeff spelled backwards is Fedge? Boy, oh boy, I love listening to all of these guys talking about Cub baseball. And then you got this Sean Chapman guy. You know his name backwards is Napoknaez. Stay tuned. Here we go.
Hey, hey, Cub fans. Welcome back to another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy. As always, I am Jeff Rogowskis, a.k.a. Candid Cubs. With me is my special co-host, Sean Hot Stove Cubbies Chapin. How you doing today, Sean?
I'm doing great. Much better than the players that keep on getting injured in Major League Baseball, I can tell you that.
Yeah, my back hurts from having to carry this rotation, much like Jameson Taillon's back hurts as he's going to likely miss some time. But as you will notice, if you're watching this with us on YouTube, we have a third person with us today as we start our trail down the NL Central preview, trying to get a good idea of what the competition looks like and what looks to be an extremely tight division. Today, we will be talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates. We have Ethan Smith, who is the host of the Locked On Pirates podcast, and he also is currently a writer for Steel City Pirates. He was born in Pittsburgh, but grew up in Georgia. But he still grew up watching Pirates baseball, and we're happy to have him here today to be our Pirates expert. Thanks for coming on the show, Ethan.
Yeah, guys, how's it going? How we doing?
Well, I think we're doing okay. We're trying to kind of sort out what is a very, very tight NL Central, looking at each individual roster for the division. Lots of top 100 prospects for each team, lots of, you know, unique storylines as we go into this season. Let's start with looking at the Pirates offseason. How would you grade their offseason, and how do you think they did this with their acquisitions, and how are they looking going into the spring?
Well, I love that you guys mentioned injuries in the intro, because of the fact that for the Pittsburgh Pirates this offseason, you obviously had the news pretty early on that Andy Rodriguez and Johan Oviedo are both going to miss 2024, both very important in their own rights. Andy, of course, being a former top 100 prospect as a catcher, Johan Oviedo really kind of being the Robin to Mitch Keller's Batman last year when they didn't even really have a rotation. I spoke about it on my show throughout the offseason, though, saying that if that news was going to happen, thankfully it happened in November and not like now, because at least there was a way to fix it. I would say that they went at least out of their way to try. I mean, you look at Marco Gonzalez and Martin Perez, two guys that were very good in 2022, not very good in 2023 for very different reasons. Obviously, Gonzalez dealing with that lingering injury that I think is very worrisome, but if he could stay healthy, he should be fine. Martin Perez just really got buried in that Rangers rotation. They get Rowdy Tellez, obviously, for everybody listening to this. I think we're all familiar with Rowdy Tellez being in the NL Central. You look at
Cubs Edward, killer.
Yeah, you look
he's
at
a,
Edward
he's
Olivares.
He's a Cubs killer, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Sorry.
Oh, you're good, yeah. And Edward Olivares is also a guy that I thought was a very sneaky little signing they made. Not a signing, but a trade from the Royals. Guy who had an expected home run average of 17.3 last year. Only hit 12, but if he could really get the launch angle up and keep that moving, that's good. And then again, another NL Central kind of guy, not for a while, but back in the division, and Aroldis Chapman really just solidifies that bullpen to no end. It's not even including the guys that could come in later in the year, like Hunter Stratton, Braxton Ashcraft, and those guys that could really make that unit a top unit in baseball. So I'd say that I feel okay about the offseason, but it is funny that talking to like some of the other hosts in Locked On of the NL Central shows, we all kind of joke about that because it's such a winnable division and nobody really went out of their way to do anything to really run away with it. So I would say that I'm okay with what the Pirates did this offseason. Think they could have did a little bit more, but also they're not a spending team usually. So I think they did fine.
Speaking of that, Ethan, the spending, obviously spending has been down considerably for a lot of teams. But it seems like, you know, when you get to that contention window, teams tend to say, you know, put the pedal to the metal. Do you ever see the Pirates taking a step forward with spending? I know typically in years past, they take care of their own, obviously, with extensions with Reynolds and a few others. But do you ever see them kind of taking that step forward and maybe signing a larger term, a big deal contract? Maybe do they step up and go crazy and go for like a Juan Soto? I know that's out of the ballpark there, but just wanted to know if maybe they'll step forward, especially with all that young talent coming up.
I really just think it depends on what happens this year. If you're looking at 2024, a lot of people in Pittsburgh want to compare 2024 to 2012, when the Pirates were about to go on that three-year run of making it to the postseason. They were a very competitive team, but not in the win column, but they were a competitive team. And you look at them last year, and you really only had two good starters in Mitch Keller and Oviedo. You also didn't have arguably your best player in O'Neill Cruz for the entirety of the year, and you still improved by 14 wins. So if they go into this year and say, let's just throw a ballpark number out there, 79 to 80 wins, or even 81 and 81, if they go and do that, I think that you will see them be a little bit more aggressive. But I also just don't think they're going to really have to be with where the holes on the roster are. Now, you mentioned a Juan Soto. Yeah, right field with Juan Soto in Pittsburgh sounds absolutely beautiful. That is something they're not going to do, though. And it's just not in their nature to do it. I really think that their focus, as you said, they take care of their own. We've already seen them extend Mitch Keller this offseason. You mentioned Reynolds and Key Brian Hayes already. I would think that you could even get into a world where Paul Skeens gets into that conversation going into next offseason, as early as it is now, before he prices himself out. You look at Termar Johnson down the line. That's another guy. So I don't really think I want them to splash money so much. I would rather extend the guys, build a core here, and then kind of have those supplemental pieces to where, yeah, you could go out and spend, but you don't have to, if that makes sense. Yeah. Kind of like the old Tampa Bay Rays model that everybody's been trying to replicate for the last 7 years now.
Them in that dark magic in Tampa Bay. They just take players and churn them out. I mean, Harold Ramirez, we gave him up for a bucket of balls, and he's hitting over 300, last year. So, I think it's a good model. I really do. And then, obviously, if you enter that window of competitiveness with, affordable contracts for your own, yeah, obviously, you'll probably be open to what you did in the previous three years of competitiveness. So, Jeff, I think you have the next question regarding lineups.
Yeah, I think just, before I move on to the lineups, just looking at, as a Cubs fan, I always find that Boston Red Sox front office tree very intriguing, given Theo Epstein and what he means to Cub fans and this organization. And, we're not going to audit his end of tenure with the Cubs. That's not what today's conversation is for. But Ben Cherington has obviously come in. He's a little bit newer. He had the first overall pick the year prior, 2022, I believe, was Henry Davis, which was a gamble from a lot of pundits. He's gotten some at-bats last year, has looked very solid this spring. Position fit might be the issue. Paul Skeens, obviously, maybe not as challenging of a pick, a very dominant pitcher, very exciting stuff. He's got major league ready stuff probably right off the bat. How do you feel Ben Cherington is doing up to this point, and what would you like to see him do going forward?
I would say up to this point, it is kind of tough because, he started in 2020 and basically got introduced to a situation where he had to move on from Joe Musgrove, Jameson Taillon, and Josh Bell, and that whole core that just wasn't ever going to really win anything here. And then you look at what he's done in the draft. You mentioned Henry Davis already. Yeah, with that draft class, it was definitely one of those picks that a lot of people kind of looked at and said, okay, this kind of seems weird. But also when you get into the logistics of an MLB draft and realize that Henry Davis saved them about $3.5 million, that allowed you to go get Anthony Solometto in that draft as well, who I believe now is, well, it was either 2021. I always forget. There's so many players in drafts, but either way, I know Anthony Solometto signed overslot, and that's one of the big reasons why those decisions are made. But
that's a conversation we had on one of our earlier episodes, is the MLB draft is has such an economic dynamic more than it has a talent dynamic, in which being able to save money early can really make you, you know, gamble on some high-end guy in the middle rounds by giving him maybe a little more than you planned. And it's not the Theo Epstein Boston Red Sox age of just writing blank checks to these guys to get them in the system. It's just not how the system works anymore.
And you look at like where the lineup is that you were mentioning and kind of the players that are here. Henry is a Charrington guy. I guess you could say that Sawinski, Telez, Oliveras, and Peguero are all Charrington guys in their own ways and how they've been acquired. But Brian Hayes was not a Ben Charrington player. Brian Reynolds was not a Ben Charrington player. Neither was O'Neill Cruz. Those are Neil Huntington's guys before he was eventually moved on from. But you look at Jared Triolo, you could look at Luis Ortiz and Jared Jones and Skeens and all these guys, but it's just so hard to evaluate him on that when those guys have not even close to, like, they're not even close to maturing yet. We don't know what these guys are. So it is very difficult to go back and look at Ben Charrington's tenure so far and really give him a grade when going into this year, I think this is really the first time you can look at this team and say, there's a real shot this team could compete with what is currently here. To preface this, there have been some trades that Ben Charrington has made that have been great. You look at the Jose Quintana trade, got you Johan Oviedo and Malcolm Nunez. Malcolm Nunez is still very much a question mark. Johan Oviedo had a great year last year, sadly sidelined with Tommy John surgery, but for 3 months of Jose Quintana, you turned him and flipped him into a starter. Great. Cool. That works for me. You look at acquiring Jack Sawinski via trade from the Padres. Jack Sawinski's a guy who has 30-plus home run power potential. So these are just things that I think the boxes will start to get checked off over this, like this year and next year, and then that evaluation process on Charrington can really begin. But looking at the situation he came into, it wasn't going to happen overnight. But I will say now that we're entering year 4 or 5 of this, it's going to have to start showing results at some point.
So Miami, March 28th, opening day. Who's the lineup the Pirates are rolling out with?
So I'll be doing a prediction show on my show more about this. So this will be more of the answer that Ethan has to give because he's on the spot right now. I think it's pretty clear the main guys that you're going to have. Obviously, Hayes at third, Cruz at shortstop. You're going to have Brian Reynolds in left field, Jack Sawinski in center. Henry Davis is likely your catcher. First base, you can swap between Rowdy Telez and Jared Triolo if you want to, Triolo being the utility guy on this team. Telez, if it's a righty, I think it's fine that you go out here with him. And then right field, I think, is still remains to be seen on what they're going to do out there. I would probably say Palacios for now, just because Oliveras hasn't shown me enough to really win the job from him in spring. Fangraphs disagrees with me. They think it's going to be Oliveras. And then second base, I'd put Peguero. So you're looking at Henry Davis, the catcher, probably Telez at first, Peguero at second, maybe Triolo at second. Triolo could slot in any of these spots. O'Neill Cruz at shortstop, Hayes at third, Reynolds in left, Sawinski in center, and then, of course, Joshua Palacios or Edward Oliveras in right. That's what I think it more than likely will be. And can't really speculate on the opening day starter because it's already been announced that Mitch Keller is going to be starting opening day. So at least we don't have to speculate on that part.
Right. So with that lineup in mind and, you know, a lot of youth in that lineup, what are a couple of players that you really see taking the step forward for the Pirates in 2024?
I think that has to start with Henry Davis, Sean. I mean, it really does. I mean, you look at Henry last year, he debuted one of the fastest number one picks to ever come up. And they were making him play right field just because you also had to get looks at Endy, a catcher, and they trusted his defense a little bit more than Henry's defense, which will be something we have to look at. But Henry Davis has had a strong spring already. There's real pop in that bat. We've seen it ever since he came out of Louisville. He's had it in the minor leagues. I just don't see a world where he struggles the way he did last year again, thus taking a step forward. And then you have some of the guys I already mentioned. I mean, even O'Neill Cruz has to take some kind of step forward. He hasn't even played to what I would amount to a full season yet. And it feels like he's been here forever. He debuted in 2022 in the middle of the year, near the back end of the year, more or less. And then he didn't get to play last year. So we really haven't seen a ton of O'Neill Cruz. And at some point, I want to see him take that kind of superstar leap. And Leover Peguero is interesting too. I mentioned Termar Johnson earlier. Anybody who's playing second base is immediately going to be looking over their shoulder going into next year with Termar Johnson. So I think for guys like Leover Peguero and Jared Triolo, they're going to have to naturally step up too. So those would be my big candidates. And then I'll throw Jared Jones out there too. A lot of people want him to go north with the team out of spring. He's sitting 98, 99 consistently with the fastball. I just still think he has a lot to work on with the off-speed pitches, which is something that he could easily go in AAA and do and be up here by May or June. But I really think Jared Jones, if he comes up and just be and just is who he is, I think he could slot into this rotation tomorrow and be the third best starter in that rotation. And that's with me mentioning Paul Skeens. And a lot of people think Skeens might come up first. And I really think Jared Jones is the guy that's going to come up first because I just think he's going to be that good. And you're looking at him being a second-round pick in 2020, and I think he's going to be a real, real good pitcher for this team. I just don't think it'll be right away in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think Derek Shelton has done a really good job of creating a culture there. Obviously, he hasn't at times been dealt the most competitive roster, but their team plays pretty hard. And, you know, from our perspective as Cubs fans in the Cub games, I've never seen the Pirates in the last few seasons as this team you walk over. They're usually very competitive games. I think one thing I would point to, and you alluded to it a little bit, is, you know, rotation depth and the bullpen getting to Bednar at times were probably the biggest challenges for the Pirates. Who are you seeing in that rotation? Obviously, you know, you've dropped Johnson, you've dropped Paul Skeens as, you know, future potentials, but who's going up north on opening day for that pitching staff and the bullpen as well?
So it's funny you asked this because I actually did a show about this last Friday about the Pirates having real questions about those last two spots. I mean, you obviously, I think, have to slot Keller, Perez, and Gonzalez in there. I don't see how you don't. I mean, those are your three guys at least. But then you're also looking at guys like Luis Ortiz. You have Jared Jones, Rowanzi Contreras, Quinn Priester, even Bailey Falter, who I don't want him to be in this rotation at all. But for Cubs fans, it might be a good thing if Bailey Falter's in the rotation. but then you also look at this rotation, and I've spoken about it a lot, that it's only going to get better as the season progresses because you're going to have the Jared Joneses of the world getting introduced, maybe even Paul Skeens at some point, JT Brubaker, who Cubs fans might remember being kind of a workhorse for this Pirates team over the last couple of years, should be returning from Tommy John surgery sometime in the middle of the year. That's not mentioning other guys too. I mean, these are not like the sexy names that you're going to come up with when you're coming up with pitching depth, but you have Kyle Nicholas, Jackson Wolf. I mean, you even look at Eric Lauer, who they recently acquired, former Brewer, who had a horrible 2023, but before that had a sub 3.7 ERA the 2 years prior to that. So you're looking at him as an option. You look at Willy Peralta. Eventually, Braxton Ashcraft maybe slots into this rotation as well. But if you had to ask me today who would be going north, I'd say it's probably Keller, Perez, Gonzalez, Ortiz, and Contreras for now. But I also wouldn't be shocked, especially if David Bednar is not available on opening day and with an injury to Dowry Moretta, if one of those guys is a long relief option in the bullpen as well to get some extra looks at the MLB level.
Is Chapman starting as the team's closer with Bednar and he'll shift out? Or do you think Bednar is in the setup role or is it a matchup situation for Shelton?
Bednar has been, from what I can gather, is still going to hold that closer spot and Chapman would stay in the setup role more often than not. But obviously matchups dictate that. If let's say you're going to the bottom of the ninth inning and you have the option of Chapman or Bednar on a good rest day and there's two lefties and one righty or all lefties, I think 9 times out of 10, you're probably going to go with the guy who throws 100 miles per hour from the left side rather than Bednar.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I think a lot of that just gets into the rest aspect of a bullpen and matchups and advanced analytics that some people might not pay attention to. But I would say more often than not, David Bednar will hold his closer spot and Chapman will stay in that setup role that he was very good in for the most part of the postseason in the second half of the year with Texas last year for Jose Leclerc. And even Colin Holderman, who was in the top 10 last year and holds. So, of course, his name fits well there. He's a guy that you could even see slot into those ninth inning roles. And even Carmen Majinski. I mean, they have a bullpen that has a lot of utility around it. there's a lot of these guys where I could see them pitching in the fifth inning, or I could see them pitching in the ninth. And that's a very good thing to have. And I think the Chapman signing really solidified that bullpen well.
So, Ethan, you know, hearing you talk, you know, first of all, you're kind of amplifying my fears with the Pirates team, because I see it as a lot of versatility, a lot of upside there. So for the 2024 team, what are you envisioning as their biggest strength and their biggest weakness?
The biggest strength is actually something I think that they haven't had in quite a while, and it's going to be the power element up and down that lineup. I mean, you guys heard me mention the lineup that I talked about earlier. Edward Olivera's, again, 17 homers expected last year on StatCast. You look at Leover Peguero, he had 9 or 10 last year. Rowdy Tellez, we know he can hit homers if he can connect with the baseball. O'Neill Cruz can hit home runs if he connects with the baseball well. Brian Reynolds can hit 20 home runs in his sleep and not even try. Key Brian Hayes last year had a resurgence a little bit with his bat finally. A lot of people said, whoa, he actually has a bat to go with this gold glove now. He could be a 15 to 20 home run guy. Jack Sawinski, who I mentioned earlier, hit 26 last year. Who's to say that number doesn't go up? Henry Davis is going to hit more home runs than he did last year with more ample playing time. That's not mentioning that you have Yasmani Grandal as a backup catcher, who's a notable power threat from that side. Connor Joe can hit the baseball well and hit it with power. Jared Triolo's had added a little bit of power this offseason as well. And if I'm not mistaken, at the time of recording, I still think the Pirates lead spring training in home runs right now. So I think it might shock people to see this team take a noticeable step forward in the power element. But I think their biggest strength definitely can be that. The weakness, and this is going to be kind of projecting a little bit, because I think it's something that even Cubs fans might be scared of, is what happens if one of these starters goes down. How does the rotation survive, if that makes sense? Like, say Mitch Keller were to get injured, what do the Pirates do at that point? Now, I'm going to knock on wood on this very hard. Keep him healthy, please. But they have those options there, but I don't think you really want to have to worry about overexerting those options due to an injury to your best player. And I think the starting pitching staff has to just remain the biggest weakness, because it also still has the most questions. So I would say the biggest strength they have is the potential for a lot of upside with the power. And I think their clear weakness is their rotation. And I mean, the bullpen is great, but as you mentioned earlier, Jeff, it's going to be tough to get to it sometimes. And that may or may not be the difference in winning this division versus having a losing record, especially in a division that's very winnable this year.
Yeah, I think one of the things that going into this idea of talking to individuals around the NL Central, I generally have a period of every spring training where I have this confidence in what the Cubs have done, and then it slowly dissipates as we get closer to opening day of thinking this team hasn't done enough to address some specific area of need. And it's interesting, I feel like this division, that pretty much sums up every team. There is I would say an Achilles heel, or maybe even bigger than a heel, for every individual team in the Central. And we're talking a 15-2 or 12-3 stretch at some point in the year might win the division. Like, straight up might win the division just because of how on top of these teams are. But as someone who covers the Pirates, what do you see as a strength for the Cubs? And what do you see as the opportunity for the Pirates, or the weakness for the Cubs?
Can I say one name, and then it'll kind of tie into what I think the strengths of the Cubs roster is?
Absolutely.
Christopher Morel. That kid scares the crap out of me. He scares me. And I can tell you that the strength of the Cubs is definitely their offensive weapons. I mean, you look at Seiya Suzuki. You look at Cody Bellinger bringing him back. You look at – he's from Pittsburgh and kills us every time he plays us, Ian Happ. I mean, you look at Nico Horner, Dansby Swanson, Christopher Morel. There's a lot of guys in that lineup that one day could hit three bombs and the next day could hit three doubles. Yeah, I mean, they're just that kind of players that I really think of. So from an outside view, I think it's definitely the lineup for the Cubs. I would say the weakness is a lot like Pittsburgh's. That rotation is just very interesting to me. It's very similar in ways too. I mean, you look at having Justin Steele in your rotation and knowing that every time Justin Steele goes out there, better chance that you're going to probably win. Same thing for the Pirates with Mitch Keller. But after that, I mean, I didn't really look at your depth chart too much, but I know you guys still have Kyle Hendricks. I know you have Jameson Taillon, who you guys mentioned to me was having back issues before we started the show. After that, there's, I'm assuming, question marks in that rotation. And it's really, if you look at every team in this division, now that I'm thinking about it, more often than not, I think the weakness of every team in this division is going to be the rotation now. Usually with Milwaukee, you wouldn't be saying that, but they get rid of Corbin Burns. No one knows really what's going on with Cincinnati's rotation, even bringing in Jesus Luzardo. And then St. Louis, yeah, you brought in Sonny Gray, Wade Miley, and all these other guys, but I mean, are they really going to be able to gruel through an entire season being asked so much out of those teams? Not to steal others' NL Central preview show stuff, but I do think the Cubs can be confident about their lineup every day, but there are questions in that rotation. And I forgot to mention Shoto Imanaga as well. So everybody listening to the show, don't kill me, please. Remember that
I was waiting. I have an infatuation with Shota, so no. I was waiting for you to say his name.
I think one of the bigger issues I have with the Cubs rotation is the lack of swing and miss. I think that is where it adds a very wide range of failure element, because you're playing with the bat pip gods. You're playing with having elite defense, which the Cubs do have a very strong middle of the infield defense, but they don't exactly have third base and first base sorted out. But they have options, and, you know, they have PCA waiting in the wings, who is a stellar defender for center field that could shift Cody Bellinger to first base. But, you know, all these things are still hypotheticals, and it's so interesting just hearing about the Pirates. Like, there are these pieces that could, you know, move that needle pretty significantly, just like the Cubs. It's just, when are they going to push those buttons? I really just thought we would see more trades this offseason, and I don't know if it was the slow development of some of the free agency. I thought originally, like, after Ohtani, I think every player, every name that signed, it's like, all right, now we get going. And yeah, I think, you know, Sean and I have talked at length of offseason A, offseason B, and offseason C. And interesting name dropping Christopher Morel, because I thought that was one of the higher likelihood players to get traded this offseason, and, you know, dangled for swing and miss starting pitching, specifically looking at, you know, Miami's options and their hunger for offense. But Miami ended up doing next to nothing. And, you know, obviously the Cubs did not trade from their, you know, their outfield depth in the minors. And here we are still kind of having the same conversation over and over again of, did they do enough to be a top team in this division? It's, the answer is sort of just like everyone else.
Yeah.
And isn't it amazing that we're both, like, we're all sitting here agreeing that starting pitching seems to be the weakness of every single team in the NL Central, but you have both Montgomery and Snell sitting out there. At least one of them is going to want to take a short-term deal in Montgomery. And we have injuries and that kind of thing, where acquiring one of those players immediately makes that a lot better, in a better situation. So I just think that is so ironic that, you know, as we go through this, you're looking up and down the NL Central and saying the weakness is starting pitching, but those two players are still out there. It's just kind of baffling to me that they are still out there, and even at this latest stage in spring training.
Yeah. And I mean, even you mentioned Montgomery and Blake Snell. I mean, even Michael Lorenzen is still a free agent. I mean, Michael Lorenzen, slot him into any of the five rotations in this division and you immediately walk away and feel a lot better about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're telling me for the Pirates, for instance, that they were to go and get Michael Lorenzen tomorrow and they sign him, you're talking about a rotation now of Keller, Perez, Gonzalez, Lorenzen, and then only one of those question mark guys. Mm-hmm. I think that fits the bill a lot better for the Cubs, even. You could have Steele, Hendricks, Lorenzen, Imanaga, and somebody else, if you really want to. I sadly don't know all the names that are available there, but even a guy like that, who's not going to break your pockets at all. He's not going to make you poor if you go get him. And he's just sitting there, and opening day is 2 weeks from now. And it's very baffling to me that these guys are just still unsigned because of a multitude of different reasons, honestly.
Yeah, especially in the Cubs situation too, in which they're tap dancing that first CBA threshold, and you know, it's their CBT, sorry, and it's frustrating because if you're gonna make a trade deadline acquisition and you're gonna have to take on salary, you're gonna go over the threshold and it's gonna count for this season anyway. So if the intent, which I understand in theory, that they don't want to signal to the market that they are willing to go above that threshold because, you know, Boris and his Sharks are going to come sniffing and asking about Snell and all these things. But at the end of the day, if the intent is to win the division and the intent is you're the Chicago Cubs, and this is not a disrespect to Pittsburgh for anyone in Pittsburgh, that they have a very large market and financial strength that they can flex in these situations and aren't because they don't need to in their minds. And that can be a very hard thing to manage as a Cubs fan, knowing that for the cost of money, you can make this team better when other teams in the same division and such are not necessarily in the same boat financially or thinking about financials in the same way. It feels like there is a way to solve this problem or to create separation, and there just has not been motivation from a team in this division to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's put beautifully. I mean, at the end of the day, the one thing that I'll always say about every MLB owner, none of them are poor. They can do it.
Right.
Now, there are a multitude of different reasons as to why the Pirates don't spend, and I'm not going to get into those because this show would end up being 2.5 hours long. but, I mean, when you break it down to brass tacks, if you really look at it and you say, eat this for a year, go up to Blake Snell and tell him, hey, what do you want for one season? Just 1 year, and just say that. Or even Jordan Montgomery, who you mentioned earlier, Sean, to say, hey, here's a check. Write the number on it for one season, and then he's off the books right after that. And you're telling me that adding Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery to any team in this division would not almost immediately make them a favorite unless it was Milwaukee, I think. Milwaukee, I think you throw them in that rotation. A lot of people have this notion right now about the Milwaukee Brewers that they're just going to all of a sudden fall off a cliff, and I don't see it happening, at least not right away. Now, if they're not competing by the date, like the trade deadline, yeah, I think you see Adames and Yelich and a lot of those other names start flying off the page. But it is baffling to me sometimes with ownership, and maybe it's even the general managers just don't want to sign him. We don't know that, but it's just baffling to me that as a Pirates fan and for you guys being Cubs fans to say that one player could literally just change the whole scope of your season and they're just sitting there doing nothing right now is very annoying. There's no other word for it other than annoying at this
point. Yeah. Absolutely.
I feel like it's such a downer, but it's spot on, especially, you know, talking about my concerns of swing and miss in the Cubs rotation. You know, Blake Snell has 2 Cy Young awards now and, you know, strikes out a large volume. I know that, you know, the control and such has been a concern at times given the higher walk rate, but contact management and such. Is, you know, the numbers look very strong and he's a guy that you can slot in the front of the rotation. I know some Cub Twitter folks have, you know, pushed back on the idea of having so many lefties. You know, some of the options in the minors for the Cubs are, you know, Jordan Wicks, and then, you know, you got Imanaga, you've got Justin Steele, and adding a more Montgomery or a Snell. But you know, there's not a ton of very good lefty starters in baseball. They're coveted, so I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing. If you're trying to change up the look of, you know, what the arm slot and things like that of what you're seeing, none of these guys, I think, are profiling that similar. You know, you got Imanaga, who is, you know, trying to be up in the zone with the fastball. You've got the unique spin of the Mississippi fastball of the Man of Steel. And then you've got, you know, got Kyle Hendricks in there, the contact management magician that's going to be on there, but it just seems like a lot of pressure on a Cub defense to really push out. I'm kind of tearing away from this conversation and kind of asking questions of a more specific player. I think the emergence of Ellie De La Cruz last year, I feel like kind of moved a spotlight away of people remembering who O'Neal Cruz is. You know, I think there's a very similar skill set there, and they both have that factor. At least when I remember seeing O'Neal Cruz play, they have that factor of like selling tickets. They have a lot of charisma. They're very exciting players. They've got a lot of upside. How's his recovery from his injury going? Is I'm slotting him in as a starting shortstop. I remember him being an average to below average defender. Is he going to be a huge difference maker for this team? Like I have been penciling him in as.
I mean, he kind of has to be. I mean, in his time in MLB, I mentioned earlier that he hasn't really even played to what I would amount as a full season yet. And he already has 19 home runs in that time. And you're looking at a guy that just the other day, people, how's he recovering? Like I'd have people ask me, how's his recovery going in spring? He had two home runs the other day and hit 116 and 114 miles per hour. I think he's fine. I mentioned, in his time so far, I mean, he has a 751 OPS, 19 homers. He's already stolen 13 bases in that time. And you break all this stuff down, and I think it's interesting because a lot of people like pencil him in as a breakout player. And some people say, well, how can he break out if he's already played so much? I'm like, guys, he hasn't played that much. He lost all of last season. I mean, you're looking at a guy again that if StatCast would stop being dumb and just let me hit the standard here for a second, because I keep trying to hit the standard for it, but it won't do it. I know he's in the ballpark of maybe 350 to 400 at-bats, which over the course of a full season, if he's playing and fully healthy, is not even close to what he's going to hit. So if he's already hitting 19 home runs in that time, you're looking at a kid that has real 20 home run, 20 stolen base potential just because he's just so fast on the base path. Mm-hmm. He has a very unique blend of just power and speed. A lot of it's just going to be, can he stay healthy at this point? And just with his frame, it's a cause for concern with what happened last year. When you're 6'7" and don't weigh a whole ton, I mean, this says he weighs 215 pounds.
No way.
I don't know about that one too much, but we know how MLB players are about their weight. Just ask Daniel Vogelbaum.
Maybe if he goes with the ball and falls into Allegheny is soaking wet.
I'm like, but either way, with a frame like that, when you practically break your leg, he broke his ankle, but when you practically break your leg, that's always going to be something that you're going to be worried about. And I mean, the kid just has unlimited potential. And now I finally was able to come up with the number 372 career at bats. He'll pass that in his sleep if he's healthy all year this year. But I do think that you would like to see him take that noticeable next step that everybody's expecting him to take, and he can't. And really, I think a lot of it's just going to be him being healthy. And then if I walk out of 2024, my only big question about O'Neal Cruz is, can he play the defensive position of shortstop? Then I think I'll walk away happy.
No, I'm very excited to watch him play again. I think, you know, young, dynamic talent for this division is so good for just the reputation across the country of the NL Central. I think the NL and the AL Central are both perceived as being very weak and, you know, potentially rightfully so based on the budgets and how rosters have been constructed. And getting guys like this, getting guys like Ellie De La Cruz, getting the Cubs as, you know, the winning organization, like a good tide rises all boats. Like these are the things that are going to get these guys exposure, get their names known. While everybody else is so focused on what Shohei's doing out west and who's going to beat the bejesus out of each other in the AL East. So that's, it just feels like very, very narrow-minded in the baseball world that knowing that there's these types of guys like right in the Midwest. And especially so, I've been doing the ballpark tour and I have been to PNC, and that has to be for me at the moment. I haven't been to all of them, obviously, yet, but it has to be a top ballpark, top five minimum. It is just absolutely scenic, gorgeous from the inside, right on the river, walking across that bridge into the stadium. Just an excellent ballpark, really good fan atmosphere. The food was really solid. I can't say enough good things. They do such a good job with that ballpark. I'd love to see, you know, 2015 levels of attendance for that team again. It just good teams in the Central makes good baseball.
Yeah, and I mean, with PNC Park, USA Today would agree with you. They ranked it the number one stadium in baseball earlier in the week. So that's always nice to see. And it's beautiful enough to where I literally have the bridge tattooed on my arm. So I think
that's really cool.
I think that speaks to the volumes of what PNC is. And like you said, I mean, you look, it baffles me that they've, for so long, since 2015, actually, have not made the postseason. And after you go back and what, if you ever, Cubs fans, just want to have fun, even just look at the atmosphere at the beginning of the game in the 2014 wildcard game or 2015 wildcard game. And it was just, Pittsburgh loves baseball. Everybody thinks it's just a football city because the Steelers are just so consistently good. But when the Pirates are actually fielding a competent roster and a competitive roster, people will go down there to the North Shore and go to games and spend their money on that team. You saw it in 2013 a lot, and that was the first time they had a winning record in 21 years. And obviously had that great moment in that wild card game. And really, I think that's what really baseball, I think, is honestly more fun when teams like the Pirates are better. I mean, look at the Oakland Athletics. Baseball hasn't exactly been fun since the A's started not being a good baseball team.
And, 100%.
I mean, and look at one of the, arguably the best World Series we've ever watched. It was between two random Midwest teams in Cleveland and Chicago. And it ended up producing some of the best moments we've ever seen in baseball history in the World Series between the Cubs and the Guardians, the aforementioned team that I don't say their name because I don't know how audiences react to it. But that World Series was arguably one of the best ones I ever watched. And it was between two teams that don't, like, I mean, the Cubs have a history of winning, but for a very long time, about as long as you could get, they didn't have a World Series. Cleveland, for the same right, really had not had a very competitive team for a long time at that point. So I just think baseball, especially, you mentioned the AL Central, I'd love to see the Royals be good again. And they went out of their way to go do some things. And I just think baseball is better when those smaller teams are finally kind of creeping back into the competitive nature of things. And it's not just, oh, it's Dodgers, Yankees every year, or it's this team every year, like how Houston's been on their tear. That's why I think a lot of people enjoyed the World Series last year, guys. I mean, it was Texas and Arizona. Neither of those teams have been that great for a while. And now for the Pirates even, I think that time's slowly and surely coming back, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, and I think especially bringing in the World Series, you look at that matchup of a team that's been building through trading and drafting and getting young talent up, and then another team that threaded that needle. I know that there were lots of folks kind of laughing at the contracts being handed out by the Texas Rangers 2 years ago. And those guys are holding World Series trophies and World Series MVPs as, you know, they kind of bring that across the finish line. So I mean, personally, when you're seeing a team put its foot out there and I guess try is not the word I want to use, but that is try something, like try spending and getting a player, try moving some players and improve your roster. And then you have, not to take a dump on this franchise once again in this podcast, but you have like the Miami Marlins. What are you doing? You got rid of your GM because, you know, it was made pretty public that she didn't agree with the direction of what they wanted to do with the team. And the direction is no direction. So, and they did nothing this offseason. And they were, you know, in 2020, I understand it was a little different playoff format, but they were a playoff team. They have some really exciting arms in that rotation. They could have added.
Yeah, that's
true. And, you know, like JD Martinez, guys that are still sitting out there, you know, put them in the middle of that lineup. And right, some of those guys are healthy in rotation. You know, maybe you sneak in. It's the assumption. Baseball's so weird, and that's what's awesome about it. Like, the Dodgers are going to spend all this money and lose in the NLCS. Like, that's not me being Nostradamus. It's just, it can happen. It's completely reasonable. Yep. Guys get cold. The October baseball is small sample size alert. You know, it's just one bad week from two stars and it's all over. Transitioning to our final question of the day, looked at some betting websites, no free ads, so I won't mention them. We see the Pirates as a 75.5 as the Vegas line. Would you take over or under that number at this time? And we'll go around. We'll start with you, Ethan.
So if you guys have listened to me throughout this entire show and heard anything I said, they had Mitch Keller and Johan Oviedo and a bunch of bullpen games and Bailey Falter as their rotation last year. You look at the rotation this year, you have Mitch Keller, Marco Gonzalez, Martin Perez, and a slew of other guys that are going to go in there. Then you also mentioned a guy that we talked about for a good minute, not too long ago, O'Neill Cruz, did not play last year. Henry Davis was not playing his natural position of catcher last year. How many games did they win last year? 76. They're going over 75.5. They're a better baseball team than they were last year, and they're only going to get better as the season progresses with the Jared Joneses and the Paul Skeens of the world coming into the fold and these guys just getting better, because these are young players that are all over the diamond for this team that are only going to keep getting better. That is a no-brainer over for me. Even if it's a matching win total of 76, I think that that's their floor, is the same exact win total that they had the year prior.
And Ethan, just want to let you know, I did place a bet on the over already for the Pirates. So to me, I think they're, for all the reasons that you said, the additions, the coming back from injury, they got a lot of prospects that are waiting in the wings that could take leaps and bounds and make it to the Pirates on the 2024 roster. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that I look at is the key to a lot of this is Key Brian Hayes. I think he's already got the glove for third, but he's going to take a big step. You talked about Christopher Morel being a guy that you're scared of. I'm scared of Hayes. In fact, I'm so scared of him that last year I was like, hey, the Cubs should trade for Key Brian Hayes. Just go ahead and trade for him. Aramis Ramirez 2.0. I was there for that. So, I mean, it's definitely the over. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think when thinking about this, and this is our first of the preview, I try to think going in, asking this type of question, if I think this team is over, who's the under? Well, I know for certain the Pirates are not my under team. I think way too much of the talent they have in the system that's on the way, and I think their major league roster improved in pretty significant ways this offseason. I think if you get some health out of Marco Gonzalez, that adds some length to their rotation. There's a lot of comps, I feel, to how the Cubs roster is structured. Marco Gonzalez is their Kyle Hendricks, contact management, and hopefully a little bit of a workhorse if he can stay healthy. You look at the swing and miss with Mitch Keller. I'm a big Mitch Keller guy. I really like him, like what he brings to the team. You look at Ke'Bryan Hayes. I think of him as Dansby Swanson. The offense is upside. You're getting, extremely, extremely good defense, high-end, top-tier defense from Ke'Bryan Hayes. Whatever he brings to the bat, he's going to be a positive WAR player by the end of the season. How high that WAR number goes is what he brings offensively, and I think he is on the cusp of being a different tier of offensive player. Even if he's averaged a slightly above average with that glove, that is dangerous. And I think the same thing of Dansby Swanson. If the offense goes up with that high rated glove, that's just gravy, just bonus. So yeah, I feel like this is a very easy over. There's just, that's way too low of a total with a rotation that addressed depth with some veteran adds. Yes, the health isn't there for some of them, and there's some just really interesting pieces at the high end of the minors there. And even so, depending on, what Mr. Charrington sees at the trade deadline, I think there's some opportunity here to improve this roster with some of the minor league depth they have as well. So I always try to think of the long game of what are the pieces on here they'd sell off. It doesn't seem as many as years past. There's still, every team has, that one or two bullpen starter guy that's on a really friendly deal that you can try to flip at the deadline if they're having a good year and you're not. But that's not how this team is constructed. They're constructed to compete for this extremely tight division that everybody is using their internal systems to shoot for that 83 to 85 win mark. And I think the Pirates are one of the teams that's going to be right there towards the top. Now ask me what I think about the Cardinals. I'm just kidding. That's for a different show. Ethan, thank you so much for joining us on this episode as we try to get a better idea of what the NL Central landscape looks like. If they're looking for you on social media or your writings or your show, where they can find you?
You can find Locked On Pirates at Locked On Pirates. That's how these guys found me. So, you know, it's pretty easy. You can also find me on Twitter at MVP_Ethan. You can find the show on YouTube and all of your audio platforms. It's literally everywhere and it's free and available to you. I mean, you can even plug me into an Amazon Fire Stick and play me in the living room at this point. And that kind of scares me a little bit sometimes, but I'm fine with it. But yeah, that's great. And the Steel City Pirates, it's just steelcitypirates.com. I do contributing writing over there with Gary Morgan, who also works at DK Pittsburgh Sports. So nice stuff over there for all of your Pirates content. So whenever you're playing the Pirates, if you want to come hear some things, and also go listen to Sam Ulber and I always forget his co-host name. So he'll Matt Causey. There we go. Go listen to those guys over at Locked On Cubs. They'd probably love to have you guys on too. Those are awesome guys over there. And honestly, I always like talking to other fan bases too, because I like to learn these things before I go and do a series and preview the series and say something stupid. So I've learned some things today.
Absolutely, I get that. And we'll probably have to have you back on for some series previews as the year goes on. I'm once again Jeff Rogowskis. You can find me on all social media platforms as Candid Cubs and as a writer over at Northside Baseball. Sean, where can they find you?
You can find Hops at Hops. Let's just edit that out.
Oh, I'm leaving it.
On Twitter and Facebook.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much again, Ethan, for your time. And if you are listening to this, do us a favor. Give us a like, subscribe, comment if you're watching us on YouTube. But until then, we'll see you next week. Have a good night.